Hey, Culture Hackers, this is an episode on productivity. We start off with some personal productivity tips, tricks, and hacks, and then we get really geeky because Jill is back on the podcast, and she has been immersed in the world of AI, artificial intelligence, and how we interact with these technologies like Siri, but that they're getting more and more integrated into our life and smarter and integrated into communication platforms like Slack. So we get really geeky about that stuff. Kind of an interesting turn from our culture, but this may become the culture if it's all driven by AI. So another episode where the audio isn't quite up to snuff, better than last time, but next time after this, I will have my full audio studio back up and running. So thank you for your patience. Without further ado, here is the episode. Hey, Culture Hackers, it's Robbie Richmond back with co-host Jill Richmond back again. Jill, how you doing?
I'm good. Hi, Robbie. It's good to hear your voice. It's been forever and a day.
I know.
It's a year, I think.
Wow.
It may be a full year that we've sort of decided to take over the microphone and talk together.
Jeez. You know, the thing that scares me about getting older is it seems that every year goes faster and faster to the point that my 90-year-old grandfather has said to me that it all went by in a blip.
Oh, God, you can't hear. I mean, that's like the one line you don't want to hear. You don't want to hear someone who is like in their 90s saying, hey, by the way, 60 years, I don't know where they went. Like, that's, you know, subtle reminder that we need to, I don't know what we need to do to fix that.
Well, here's the good thing.
You've been busy for the past year. So, I don't think you don't feel like you've been, you know, weighed down by indecision. You've been busy.
There are times when, you know, I realize the times when I'm weighed down by indecision, it's there's a lot of resistance, and I sometimes need to just slow down and let things percolate, and it's usually because I want to move faster that the indecision happens, and so yeah. But I've certainly done a lot. The good saving grace that I think to the getting older though is that, and my dad and my grandfather have confirmed this, that memories get better over time, you know. So the bad ones don't seem so bad, and the good ones seem really good.
Do you think that's because we sort of edit, we become highly editorial over a period of time, and so, you know, we sort of start cherry picking and get really nostalgic about particular memories?
Probably. But, I mean, you know, it could go the opposite way, where you get more and more regret for all the things you missed. But luckily there's something, maybe it's a survival mechanism, like our brains know that if it got worse, we would just shoot ourselves. And so to make life bearable, it makes the memories better.
Totally. I would totally agree.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about how to make your life amazingly full of so much, because today's talk is culture of productivity.
Mm-hmm. This is a hot topic. This is your niche. This is kind of your favorite topic.
It's one of them. It's definitely one of them, because, you know, it really started for me when I first read GTD, Getting Things Done, and the first time I hated the book. I thought it was terrible. And then the second time I loved it, but I didn't do it. And then the third time I finally implemented it. So I've never read a book three times. But Getting Things Done, I love the subtitle too, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. So not just get a lot of crap done, but how do we get it done and not stress about it? And the whole way that he teaches about how the mind works, and how the big game changer for me, one of the things that really prompted this podcast was when I was working with our mutual friend and coach Hans, talking about my open loops. And open loops are things that are just out there that are incomplete, especially for me, a lot of notes, like a ton of stickies, a ton of notes, a ton of emails, all these things that are just out there. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, you got to clear those within 24 to 48 hours or it leaks energy. And ever since that day, I've been processing them within 48 hours, and my amount of energy really has greatly increased, where at least I have control over all the things I'm not doing, whereas when I had them all over the place, that feeling of being out of control really drained a lot of my energy.
But what does that actually look, I mean, what does that look like for you? I mean, I know what it looks like for me, but, you know, what does that look like for you?
For me, it's a ton of sticky notes everywhere, both digital sticky notes as well as actual sticky notes. It means a bunch of projects in flux with no prioritization to them, a bunch of emails I haven't answered. It means on the other end of it, you'd see me going from idea to idea to idea, like, you know, tab on the browser to tab on the browser, a bunch of those tabs open. And so the clearing out of those, not only has it made more focus, but now I get hesitant to start new tabs because I know I'm just going to have to clean it up later. So why make a mess that I'm going to have to clean up?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I told you, I stuck. It's been good for me. And it's funny, it did come up when I originally met Hans, and I've been pretty much sticking to it, which is just the basic Kanban system. Yeah. You know, it's, I have a whiteboard up. And every morning I've got everything broken into from 0% to 100% to task. And then I have post-it notes and I move them around the whiteboard, you know, based on where I'm at. And especially now, because instead of being focused on one project with product sprints, marketing sprints, and all of them in between, now I'm starting to work on multiple projects. It's like, it's sort of keeping my head together. It seems really basic, just basic Kanban system, but
yeah. So guys, if you don't know what Kanban is, K-A-N-B-A-N. It's a really cool system of moving notes across a workflow. So the most basic is to do, doing, done, sometimes with an at waiting column when you're waiting on information from somebody, but it can be applied to any workflow. And the idea is you only keep one to two items in process that you're actually working on at any time if you're following the rules of Kanban. And I think one of the biggest breakthroughs of it is that it makes it visual and tangible and real, where it, instead of just lost as digits somewhere. And I've seen it work so well for teams because the whole team rallies around that board, and there's something about it being going from intangible to tangible by being real on a board.
I love it. I mean, it was, I have to say, just in working on our product team alone, it was really, it was the only way that we were able to operate. We just had multiple teams. This last company, we had multiple people that were spread out across the US, and it was like, oh my God. So I know many people are used to working at different time zones. For us on the product side, it was starting to become a nightmare, and it was the only way to sort of, for me to mentally process, the team as well, for me to mentally process what was ongoing and what wasn't and how to sort of prioritize. Yeah, it was brilliant. So, yeah. I mean, I'm glad Hans that had that moment. What else are you curious? Like, what are some of the other things that are, and they're all tactics. What are some of the other things that are sort of clarifying for you in terms of,
That was the first game changer. The second game changer was no more than 2 to 3 half hour periods on email. Because before that I was on email all day, every day, in line at the bank, constantly had the screen open. Which made me highly, highly inefficient because it was just on all the time. And it blew me away that the first few days I did it, several days, I didn't even need more than 2 periods to clear out my inbox and actually respond and get it down to 0. And the value of that kind of time constraint, I've been experiencing a lot recently. Like, I just moved out of my apartment and I didn't realize how early the cleaners were going to come and how it was actually a 4 days earlier for the lease to end than I thought it was. So I basically had this small period of time to do it in. And I got it done because it was time boxed rather than having 4 days to get it done. I got it done in the, you know, this small apartment, like a half a day.
Wait, so you found out that you had to be out of your apartment 4 days earlier than you thought you did?
Right. Yeah, well, and I could have extended it if I paid some extra money, but I thought that this is perfect because I really wanted to get out of there sooner anyway.
Fair enough.
And especially with the time constraint of the cleaners coming in a couple hours after, I got way more done. And it reminds me of this quote, a woman who I was dating once in the Air Force. I said, "What's the most surprising thing you've learned in the military?" And without missing a beat, she said, "How much you can get done in 30 seconds.
In 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I've heard you say that before, and I thought that was really brilliant. No, you know, it's like, it sort of reminds me, did you ever read the book Thinking Fast and Slow?
No.
Really brilliant. It's much broader about how short thinking or fast thinking, you know, it's sort of the the notion of making really, really split decisions and how sometimes brilliant they are. And the long thinking is the processing, and sometimes you're not making me, you're actually taking more data in than you need to.
Yeah.
Right. And it becomes very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's a good book and one that you should pick up, but, it definitely sort of highlights this notion of like 30 seconds, so much can happen. Good for you for being disciplined. I don't know if I can be so disciplined about this email. And I'm not on email that much anymore.
Here's the thing. This is the other hack that is when people oftentimes make changes, they won't put an end date on it. And so it's really, really threatening. So what I did with, and I did this with friends, we all had this idea, is we said it's going to be for a week and that's it. And all we have to do is commit to that week. And then after that, if it's not a failure if we don't do it after that, right? That the goal, because that's, most people just say, oh, now I'm going to do this forever, and because of that it feels impossible and you just don't do it. And mm-hmm. So I know you could do that, Jill, for minimum a day, maybe two,
oh,
maybe
of course.
Three,
you,
right?
I mean, you know me well enough to know that if you say I'm gonna, you know, you have a challenge for the next 2 days or 3 days or 5 days, I'm gonna do it just because you gave me the challenge,
right?
Of course. Yeah. Yeah, and it's worth me considering. The problem that I have in kind of definitely part of the thread of conversation is I am often less on email and more on Slack.
Yeah.
Right? I'm finding that I'm more on Slack, or had been more on Slack than I was on email, which even that has been a productivity drain.
Oh, actually. I've heard about that. I've heard people at some companies have to do these like Slack-free hours to get people off of it and just get back to working.
That's fundamentally the problem for a company that is really trying to be, there's a notion that actually what's happening is you're becoming incredibly more productive on Slack. It can be a lot worse, because what happens is, and you know this, it's like, you are in multiple channels and then you're called out on a bilateral conversation. And then if you're on multiple channels, there's a lot of white noise and you're not sure what you need to read. And then all of a sudden, let's just say you take that and then you're in multiple Slack teams that some are work, some are for other companies, some are for other clients. And you literally are staring at, especially if you're on your mobile device, you're literally staring at maybe 20 Slack teams. And all of them have, like, you're called out in them and you have no idea what your response time needs to be. And so it can be this like worse drain than email, because at least with email, you can kind of triage it. With Slack, you sort of aren't able to until you actually open it up and start looking at it and scroll through up and down where you're called out. It's still an imperfect science.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It just made me think of a new reason why Slack does work well in my mind. I heard this interesting concept called Conway's Law from the software world, which states that the code of software is actually a reflection of the personal dynamics and interactions of the team that created the software.
Yep, that's right.
And so it makes me wonder how much what Slack may be doing is really building stronger relationships and more human contact than people had before. And that's kind of a richer interaction, which even if it's a productivity suck, gets people more in sync in terms of how they know each other.
Well, because it's not a unilateral, it's not a single purpose interaction. It's a multi-purpose interaction. So, you know, like the way that you're communicated to will be either direct or indirect, which is very different. It's like with email, you either go to blind copy, right? Right.
Yeah,
instead, it's like, maybe I should be paying attention to this email thread, but I'm not really directly related to it. Whereas in blind copy, I'm eventually going to be pushed out of the email thread anyway. Right.
Right. Right.
I make an introduction, I'm pushed out. Yeah, no, you're pretty right.
So if you were to, you've had a lot of experience both on email and Slack. If you were to start a company from scratch right now, and you could have just carte blanche, and you have a team to begin with, and you're going to set all the standards now while it's blank, would you set the standard of email is only for external, out of the company communication, and Slack is all our internal communication?
Yes, I would. I would. I'm still pretty bullish about Slack. There are lots of things that I don't love, But the indirect and direct communication I can have with team members, and then the search capability and the ecosystem that I can build on top of Slack and use for, you know, multiple productivity applications we can talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would. And I did, you know, so I still would. And that was really the way that we handled it. I mean, I just stepped away from a company where we were building our integrations on messaging applications. And so,
well, yeah, let's talk about this, because I want to know the distinction between, and for those of you, listeners who don't know what this is all about, first of all, Slack is this asynchronous chat tool. It's taking over the startup and corporate world, even, of replacing email. It has a lot of ways to integrate all kinds of other applications, for example, Google Docs. Rather than having to link out, it can really integrate Google Docs and many other things like Trello. Anything with an API really starts to connect in with Slack. And so people are developing all kinds of integrations for Slack, including bots. And Jill, would you define what a bot is?
Yeah, so a bot is, I mean, the best way to describe what a bot is, it's almost an API, right? A bot will create using enabling technologies like AI or natural language processing, a single purpose or multi-purpose capability of interacting with it, where you're speaking in close to natural language or as much natural language or as many cues as you can, so that the call to the piece of software is sort of listening in on your conversation, or it's able to respond to your natural language, as opposed to an app.
Okay, that's good for all the geeks. So let's just go through like the most basic example of a bot from a real world perspective.
The most basic bot from the real world perspective. I mean, Slack essentially has its own bot, right? So it talks to you about how you should set up your teams. It tells you when someone has joined a team. Mm-hmm. It communicates to you directly. So it's back and forth communication between what would feel like a person. Mm.
So what would be the scenario? So I'm on Slack, I'm typing to a friend, and what happens where a bot starts interacting with me?
So sometimes a bot can listen into the channel and can listen in for keywords. Mm-hmm. So let's like use a really rudimentary example. I'll use the example of our company, for instance. Mm-hmm. Let's say you and I are talking and it's lunchtime. And I say to you, hey, Robbie, I'm hungry. The bot can actually listen into that conversation, or can listen into a channel. It's listening in for keywords. And then it would direct message you, right, or direct message both of us and say, hey, Robbie, or hey, Jill, looks like you're hungry. What can I get you? How can I help you? So it becomes, there are bots that have become almost virtual assistants in particular verticals, or to help you set up operational tools within Slack, or that can help you set up. It's like, I hate to use the example, but do you remember Microsoft Clipboard?
Yes.
Microsoft Paperclip, rather?
Yes.
It's a little bit like the Microsoft, and the worst are the Microsoft Paperclip types of experiences.
Right, which is foreboding. And it actually reminds me a little bit of early Microsoft, early IBM PC. And I remember the commercial, the idea was things like, Mom will keep all her recipes on the computer now. And that never happened. You know, like maybe it got there eventually with the web, but Mom was not sitting there using her computer for that. And so I wonder, and maybe we can distinguish this here on the show for everybody who's curious, like what is the truth of where this is actually working now, and people are using them and the bots are helping and it's actually leading to real world productivity, versus this very theoretical type of framework that people are betting on, which reminds me of when people were investing in all those Facebook apps that eventually just went nowhere.
Correct. And, you know, it's like, if you think about Phil Libin, who was at Evernote, has become very bullish as an investor in the bot space. And he likes to describe bot. Basically, he's built this kind of bot atlas, right? So you have bots that are on the consumer to enterprise side. You have bots that are just human assisted. So like there is a human on the other end that's responding to things that you are saying. Mm-hmm. And then there's fully automated bots. I think the the ones that are becoming the most useful, and some of them are like really, they're meant to be like funny and clever and have Easter eggs and not and gamify things, but not really be helpful. The ones that have been the better experiences and the better advanced are the single purpose bots that are fully automated, right?
So let's give listeners some examples of these. Where are people getting real value in some of these scenarios?
I think that there are some bot experiences that handle travel that are single purpose, mm-hmm. and they're getting and if you think about it, I mean, I almost like to look at it as the bots that are becoming the most helpful are solving the search problem, right?
What's the search problem?
So let's just say if I were looking for a flight or a restaurant, I might go to Google. Then I'd have to like go through a search and go, let me go to Expedia. Let me do a further search. So I'm constantly going through deeper dive searches as opposed to just dialing direct to a quote unquote fully automated single purpose bot where I say, I'm looking for a flight from LAX to DCA. Great. And then it unfurls all of these, you know, it basically unfurls all of this information for me directly in the channel that I'm working in, as opposed to having to go to another tab, go to Google. I know it sounds really small mm-hmm. and like not a big deal, but the less friction for me on a bot experience where I'm just like, it's basically pulling out all of the search for Expedia and all of the search through Travelocity, and it's doing it, and I don't have to leave Slack, for instance. And then it will say, would you like me to help you book this right now? So it becomes almost a virtual assistant, but it's a single purpose virtual assistant. And so it can dive deep enough to help get me the information that I need. I'm seeing those experiences as being the best, although where they fail is, and most of them still fail on the natural language. So in colloquially, if I'm just speaking colloquially, you know, I'm not often getting the greatest responses. So I have to almost stick to a script. Would I like this? Yes. Would I like this? No. Do I want, you know, do I want a flight leaving in the AM? Yes. So really single answer. So the natural language processing is just not really there yet. Yeah. But if it's a single purpose, then those are the places where I'm seeing the best experiences.
Got it. Got it. And
does that make sense?
Yeah. And you integrated some of these into your own Slack experiences?
Have I? I have. Yeah.
And what have you found the most value with?
Good question. It's funny, you know, like just because I'm curious, the most value that I've had on one of the integrations is a Product Hunt integration. You know, I'm paying attention to a lot of the companies that are launching their products on Product Hunt. Product Hunt does exactly what I want in as a bot experience. It's like every day I get an update. It sends it right to me on Slack directly at 2 p.m. And I go and I do the roundup. And some information, so some media sources have been very good in terms of Slack integrations. I've seen Oslo, which is now like private beta. Oslo's actually been one that I like and I've been sort of paying attention to.
And this is, what's Oslo?
Oslo is actually an app. They are really redefining, as I've described, search, which is it's still a bot experience on an app, and you speak to Oslo, and it basically asks you what you're looking for in terms of news, in terms of the weather, and in terms of food, and can do recommendations down to the restaurant level on the food side, and then make reservations for me. They will be able to handle delivery as well, but it's a fully automated bot.
Got it. And is this stuff that you see, is this going to change the world eventually kind of stuff, or is this like rich white people problem solving?
Do I think it's going to change the world? I don't think anything that we've seen to date has changed the world yet. I think it's going to change the user experiences.
Interesting. Like from what to
what? User experiences are going to change. I think as you start seeing, we've already started to see Surrey open up, and we've seen.
What do you mean?
So they've basically opened up to third-party developers. So it now becomes the call goes from you to Surrey, and if I'm asking for weather, I get very specific information. So you're starting to see this whole ecosystem of a virtual assistant.
Is this Siri? You said Surrey or Siri?
Siri.
Siri. So the Apple iPhone.
Correct.
Got it. And so third-party developers can tap into Siri now?
They're starting to.
Wow.
Starting to make it open. So I think it's going to change the way that we, in the way that the app changed our interface on our smart, like the, our experiences on our smartphones, mm-hmm. I think what you're starting to see is bots and these integrations are changing the way that we interact around search, around assistance, around like these ecosystems as we know it. I think it's going to change the way that like our Google experiences, you know, when I say about search, it's like, I'm not going to go to Yelp. I'm going to speak to an application that's going to make a call. And it's going to be a lot more friction free. Do I think they're white people problems? No, I think they're going to, I think there's going to be some healthcare solutions that are going to come in the same way, right? As you're being provided information and you, and I always sort of think about like with AI or information, I often feel like the context is the most important, right? So let's just say I'm reading a piece in the Washington Post about Bosnia. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to eventually say, hey, by the way, can you tell me where Bosnia is? I'm giving you a bad example, but can you give me some context here? And so instead of just giving me a roundup of articles, it's going to provide information to me in a way that I am placed into the context of it.
So this is essentially, you know, what's been imagined in science fiction for a while, or like Interstellar, where he's talking to the robot, or Iron Man, where he's talking to Jeeves or whoever that character is. Like, it's actually going to become more and more real.
It is going to become more and more real. I think the companies that on the bot side are the single purpose ones to be paying attention to. The bigger players, as we know, are going to be, you know, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, who are building out the ecosystems. Who the winner is, I'm not sure. You know, Samsung. That is basically, yeah.
So is this the kind of thing where, is this like World Wide Web early 90s kind of feel in terms of stage?
I think I've seen it being compared to like 2007, 2008 in terms of apps.
So for people who are listening, who want to be on the edge of culture, who aren't necessarily going to go install a bunch of beta bots right now, who certainly aren't going to go code bots, but might want to have this on their radar in terms of the direction that things are going, in terms of
right.
what you're talking about how the nature of interfaces are changing, what would you say is the knowledge or hacks or tips or whatever you'd call it that would be helpful for them to know right now?
That's a good question. I would pay attention to you don't even need to get an Alexa. Pay attention to what Amazon is doing. I would pay attention to Google's new hardware device. I might even install, just out of curiosity, one of the this is what I would do. I might install a company that is still an app that is changing the interface, just so you're just curious about what the experience is like. I mean, I don't want to plug them too heavily, but I think a great one is Oslo, even Luca. These are all apps that you can basically download onto your smart device and then say, like, I wonder what this new user experience is eventually going to be like.
Mm.
I think it's a great way to just play around. You'll get a feel for what works and why it works. You'll also get a feel for why the natural language might just not be there yet. But I think it's just a great kind of, let me dip my toe in and see what people are actually doing, still using an app that I'm comfortable with and I know how to sort of operate an app rather than integrating something on Slack or Facebook Messenger. Or, you know, I think that's a great kind of a gateway.
All right, so let's talk about Glide.
Yeah.
I
know you've been using it.
I'm trying to even understand why I'm so intrigued by it and fascinated with it. So if everybody doesn't know, and it was Jill who introduced this to me, Glide is an app with really fast asynchronous video, meaning I can shoot a 5 minute or less video and send it really quickly, really easily. And I can either record it live to broadcast to somebody or record it and then send it. And it also has texting and photos in there. And especially since I feel like I was just in a relationship with Snapchat and got really burned, like I was dating a 20-year-old girl and just did not understand her. And just thought, even though I wanted to so badly, I just like really couldn't get with it and keep up.
I've said this, it was like there was a New Yorker, it was one of my favorite New Yorker cartoons. There was like this picture of a man sitting at a desk with his head blown off. And it said, there's a man staring at him. He said, just another over 40-year-old trying to figure out Snapchat again. And it was like, yeah, that feels about true. And it's the ephemeral piece, which we know is like now kind of not, is not necessarily the case for Snapchat, but it's the ephemeral piece that I often like wrap my head around and said, I don't get it for me.
Well, that's the piece that I get because the idea of like, I took this crazy picture on Snapchat of me with all these weird food stuff in front of me that there's no way I would have posted in Facebook. And I thought, oh, this is just a Snapchat. It's going to disappear. I don't care about it. So it freed me up to get my weird on a little bit more. And I see the value of that. But, you know, I think that there's not a whole lot of stuff for me that way anymore. Like, I'd either not talk about it or just post it on a place where it will be seen and recorded for all time. But the thing that really just started to bug me was two things. One is the 8 seconds or so was just not enough time for me to get something coherent out there. And I get that you can do several of them and string them together. But watching my friends streams of stories, as they call them, of these photos and filters and things like that. Like, I felt like my day was no better because of that.
No, I never had a better day because I was, there was never a better day. Like, if that's what your gauge is, you're like, is my day better because of this? It is not better.
Well,
because
like PixHD, you know, which is the app that just finds photos on Reddit. And you can get to the funny or the gifts section. Like, that has genuinely improved my day at times. The signal-to-noise ratio isn't high enough for me to keep the app, and I let go of a lot of apps. But there are definite days where I look back and I say, that improved my life. I laughed more, and I got to have stuff to send to people that was funny.
Totally. Yep, got it. So I'm curious. Keep talking about Glide, because I know that you've been tooling about with it, and I'm sure you have some insights and some thoughts about its application and why you maybe are intrigued. I'm just curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah, so I've been having messages back and forth with people. And
you don't message me on Glide.
I'll do it more. So it's such a rich interaction, and it made me realize, like, okay, why haven't I done more videos before, because it's just a video app that goes back and forth. And I realized there's two brilliant distinctions that Glide has that to me makes it an incredible experience. One is the video is so fast back and forth that it doesn't have that lag time that makes you feel like, oh, there's that pain in the butt factor. It's just almost instantaneous. So the gratification of getting and sending a message is instantaneous.
Because there's real time video, right?
Yes.
So it's live, right?
Well, can be live. It can be, or it can be recorded. But either way, even if it's recorded, it very instantly gets it over there very quickly.
Yes. Yep.
And then the other is because it can be live that becomes a recording. I found that when I was sending video messages in other kind of programs, I would do a take 5, 6, 8, 10 times because I'm such a perfectionist and an egoist who wants to look good and sound good that I frustrated myself. And I was like, I don't want to do these anymore. But now every time I hit the live button, because it forces me to do it in one take. And so it sends over that record, either they're watching it live or it sends that live cut as a recording. And so my interactions have gotten faster, but also richer because it captures all the emotion that texting doesn't capture. And it gets around phone calls, which you either have to schedule or just go way too long.
Well, and voicemail, which...
Oh, voicemail is a
classic for leaving that voicemail message, which is like, yeah, you know what? Text me.
It's become a pit of despair. There is like nobody in voicemail world anymore. It's just, you got to expect that it will not be returned.
Now, okay, I get that for for just bilateral interactions, but I mean, how do you imagine, and I know that there are a million different use cases, but how do you imagine it's going to be any different from the number of other tools that are available to me if I have, I hate this word, but if I have an influencer community or what kind of engagement, where do you think that's going to be game changing? Or do you think it's not really going to be game changing? Nothing has to be really game changing. I just am curious if you see there's any major differentiator.
I think it is because it's longer than 8 seconds, you can actually get nice, coherent stories across that eventually, you'll be able to broadcast better. And right now, it's easy to send out links to the videos as well. And because of that, it's one of those things where I just feel like I'm in on something early. And I don't know if it'll spread, but it's like the kind of people who do want to be on it, who like it, who know how to use it. It's like those are the kind of people that I want to talk to. Whereas I don't want like all my Facebook friends on this. And I'm glad that people aren't going to it in droves. I think this is a much richer interaction platform, and it's I don't know. To me, the funny thing is, I haven't been this excited about an app in a really long time, and I've eliminated so many apps that I have one screen of apps now.
Do you know this is a very different conversation than we had about a week ago?
What was that conversation?
You were like, nah, I don't get it. You said, you were like, it was like a completely different. I didn't hear you say anything like this. But the only other question I have for you is, where do you think it differentiates from something like Periscope, right? I don't mean to.
Oh, because Periscope isn't really point to point. And Periscope lets you go on forever, which nobody wants to see forever. And so right now you've got these two crazy polarized ends where Snapchat is doing 8 seconds
Right. You have time polarized ends, but then you also have the difference between what is bilateral conversation and the use case for broader community conversation in video chat, right? And there's nothing that's covering all of those. So you can just see that there are a bunch of different use cases for a platform that maybe just you use between you and three other people because it's easier for you to communicate what you want to say on Glide than it is on text. I mean, I'm notorious for Watson released, it was brilliant. Watson released this platform. I think it was Bluemix, actually. It was Bluemix who had written this platform, but it was. You could gauge your, you could do tonal analysis on something that you would send before you sent it out.
What?
And so I would, yeah, no, it's brilliant. I'll send it to you. You could drop the text into a tonal analysis sort of like API. You can just run it through and it will come back like Google Translate and say like where it is on the scale of being aggressive.
Really?
And it was like everything I popped in there was no surprise. It was like aggressive, aggressive, aggressive. And I thought, you know what? I'm gonna have to go to another platform. So I think that's where it's brilliant because of course it's so much easier. I mean, I don't necessarily want always to be seen. It's why I don't use FaceTime that frequently. I don't really always want to be captured in a video, but I do think the tonality of what I want to convey, even if it's just a single bilateral video, is much better than a text. Right? Yeah. I'm glad to hear that you've changed your mind because when we spoke last week or a week and a half ago,
Really? I thought I was excited then too. I wasn't excited.
no, you said, I feel like there's been a lot of other companies that have come out like this and no one's really solved the problem. And I'm not, I don't really know. Let me see. You were totally on the other side of the spectrum. You were sort of like, nah, I'm not convinced. So
Oh, wow.
I think you must have tooled around with it for the past week or so, and it's been useful. That's usually how you work. You sort of need like your own space to figure it out and whether it's useful for you. Yeah. I got it. Anything else that you're sort of like
Well,
being exposed to?
that reminds me of something I want to mention, which is I was talking with some experts in the health space, and they were talking about how people will use their products, get better, and forget that things were ever bad.
Yes.
And they have to record them at the beginning so they remember. And it just reminds me right now, like, I don't even remember not liking Glide. And so, like, you telling me this, it sounds like a videotape that I don't even remember seeing.
Yep.
That's funny. Yep.
Isn't that funny? Robbie, can you hit stop for a second?
Sure.
Okay. Are you plugging X-Pill at all, or you don't want to talk about it?
Not yet. I will, like, maybe in the next one.
Okay. Go ahead.
Hold on. What is that?
What's what?
You're shaking something.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. Hold on. Ow. There we go.
All right, well, let's go back to some of the productivity tips or hacks or anything we can leave our audience with. It amazes me how these things that I was saying at the beginning of the show they're so basic in a lot of ways. I mean, Tim Ferriss for years has been saying, limit your email to two windows. Don't do anything else, you know, and GTD. Another one is Brian Tracy's Eat That Frog concept, right? Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't. Go ahead.
Oh, it's so great. It's a story where he says, look, if you have to eat a frog, eat it first thing in the morning, because otherwise you'll spend all day dreading it.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough.
So he's like, take on that thing first thing in the morning that you just don't want to do all day. And then the rest of your day will be awesome. And that's the thing about the frog, though. It's every single time it's hard. It doesn't get easier.
Yeah.
Because it's got to be something.
I would agree. That's actually brilliant. And that's something... I have to swallow that frog. I don't do that. And that is another thing that I really don't do. I actually put off the least favorable thing until like later on in the afternoon. And I do it all the time.
Right. Yeah, me too. I mean, it's just like our human nature. And I constantly have to remind myself. At one point I had an actual blue clay frog on my desk to remind me. That didn't really work, by the way. But it really freaking works. So these ones, the clearing of the open loops in 24 hours, the time boxing of activities, especially, the other one, a classic one again, Pomodoros. You ever use Pomodoros?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
25 minutes on, 5 minutes off.
Yep.
And it's amazing, that level of focus.
Yeah, I do. Here's another basic one, and it's really hackneyed, but I do it. On my Kanban board, I actually usually put up, here is the one thing you have to accomplish today. I try and make it as specific as possible, but you can't close the day until whatever this is done. And I usually know what it is, like around, like I wake up in the morning. I'm pretty routined, you know that. I'm like super routined. I wake up in the morning, same time every day, and I go to the gym and then by the time I sit down and start doing work, it's like 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. And I actually know exactly what that one thing is that I have to accomplish. And I put it right on the top of the Kanban board. And I'm like, okay, now you know, you got this one thing that has to happen. Nothing else can be considered complete until it's done.
Yeah.
And that's worked. It's worked. It's something that you inadvertently reminded me of, actually.
Nice.
So, yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks for that.
Well, anything else you want to leave our listeners with before we get going?
No, I think there's certainly been an enormous amount of chatter around the bot space, but I'd keep paying attention and start weeding out for things that are, because you're going to see an evolution of these products over at least the next 3 months, and I'd start paying attention to who some of the winners are. I'd start playing around with some of the ubiquitous assistant apps. I certainly am paying attention to it, and I think it's going to change. It hasn't yet, but is going to change the way that we interact with a lot of our experiences, or our expectations are going to be fulfilled very differently on search, on delivery and fulfillment, on just booking a flight. I think all of those individual experiences are going to be changed a lot.
Nice. Cool. Well, we'll stay tuned.
Cool. Sounds good. I'm so happy that we got a chance to catch up again. I look forward to doing this again.
You too. You too. We'll do more. So thanks for being with us, Culture Hackers. More episodes at culturehackers.com. See you next time.